Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, analysis, and cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, how are you today?
Carlos, I am great. We had a great playoff. Very exciting at the Valspar on Sunday. The LPGA Tour returns to the U.S. after the very successful Asian swing. And it's the beginning of March Madness this week. Carlos, do you have your bracket filled out? Can anyone beat Kentucky?
They won't win. Predicted
they
right
will not win.
Today.
Mark it down.
They will
not win. Mark Carlos it down. Says.
I said it. They will not win. I'm not going to say who's going to win. I'm just saying they won't win. That's easier. At least I have 50-50 chance.
No, you got more now. You got 64-1 or 68-1, but or 67-1, I guess technically. But I don't know.
Kentucky's yeah, I got all 67 teams, so we'll see how that helps me. Well, we also have our VIG of the week is going to be David Lake. He's the founder of One Iron Golf. But we're going to go right away to the Par 5 news, sponsored by United Golf Network. And like Fred, you were saying about what a playoff. Jordan Spieth came through a playoff there against fellow Americans Sean O'Hare and Patrick Reed to win the Valspar Championship at Innisbrook in Florida. Spieth was 3 shots behind Ryan Moore with just 6 holes of the final round to play. But while Moore faltered with 3 drop shots coming down with the stretch, Spieth rallied with 2 birdies, then a series of incredible par saves. On the 16th, he came with the par from a horrible position in the greenside bunker. A flop shot from the deep rough and a clutch putt on the 17th kept him in a tie for the lead, and another testing putt on the 72nd hole saw him make the playoff on a 72nd hole total of 10 under par. Spieth said, "It was a crazy back nine. No, Jordan, that is called talent." Patrick Reed was the first man to post 10 under. He held a long birdie putt on the 72nd green for a fine closing of round of 66. Sean O'Hare then matched him for the 4-round total after a great par save on the 18th and the final round 67. Then, when Spieth held a 12-foot putt to also save par on the last, there was a 3-way playoff. All 3 men made pars on the first 2 extra holes before Spieth took the title, but with a great by making a 30-foot birdie putt on their third sudden death hole to see off this playoff rivals and claim his 2nd official PGA Tour title. He has now climbed to a career-high number 6th on the official World Golf Rankings, and the 21-year-old is now joining Tiger Woods, Sergio Garcia, and Robert Gammons as the only players since 1940 to claim 2 PGA Tour titles before their 22nd birthday. Hey, his goal is clearly set. He said afterwards that his sights are set on the world's number one, Rory McIlroy, and becoming the best in the world. Well, he'll have to take a number for that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people waiting to do that as well, but I'm sure he can get an expedite, so watch out. For O'Hare, who hasn't won since the 2011 Canadian Open, he had to earn back his full PGA Tour card last 2 years on the Web.com Tour Finals. He was in contention for the first time since longer than he can remember. His swing and his nerve held up fine, even though he had a 12-foot birdie putt from the 2nd playoff hole that caught the lip and didn't get the win. For Patrick Reed, he made a 30-foot birdie, like I mentioned, on that last hole that got him into a playoff. He made 2 improbable par saves in the playoff, especially that one from the bunker. Who would have imagined he got that ball into the green? But he couldn't get the win against Spieth there at Innisbrook. Another player that is kicking into high gear at the right time is the world's number three. That's Sweden's Henrik Stenson, who made his debut this year at Innsbruck, and he left his stamp there at the Copperhead by finishing fourth at 9-under. The Stensonator had a 32 on the back nine thanks to three straight birdies, 14, 15, and 16, sinking putts improbable from 24, 32, and 15 feet. He's getting hot towards the Masters, finished T4 last week, fourth now, and this was his sixth top five finish in his last 10 starts worldwide. Finally, Moore, as I mentioned, he was the 54-hole leader and already winner this season at the CMIB Classic, faltered on the stretch, fell out of contention, just as he did last week at the WGC Cadillac Championship at Doral. So, bad luck for him. This famous snake pit got him with the bogeys in number 16 and 18. But Fred Spieth got the better of his Ryder Cup teammate Patrick Reed on the playoff after Patrick Reed got the best out of him in a playoff last year.
You know, it was really, really fun to watch down the end there, because it's a tree-lined course. You know, it's not open. They had to do a lot of chipping and putting, a lot of short game stuff there. I found it really interesting watching it. And you know, we had Patty Harrington make the big comeback at Doral, and now, you know, Sean O'Hare kind of rose from the dead here, and you had Reed and Spieth competing. You know, Mark Rolfing is trying to say that it was the best finish of the year so far on the PGA Tour. I don't know. The playoff with Hahn and Bubba and Reed at Riviera wasn't too bad either. So, but yeah, it's pretty good stuff. But you know, a lot of fun. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Patrick Reed. You mentioned him, made the playoff this week. Didn't win, but had another really good week. You know, it's the controversy just continues to swirl around him. You know, he's performing at a very high level on the golf course and is really having a very strong year. He has made the cut in all nine of his starts this year. He won. He has a runner-up. He's got three top tens. He's won $2.1 million and is number three on the FedEx Cup and number 15 in the world ranking. If you remember a couple weeks ago, we had the author, Shane Ryan, and his new book that's due out in May called Slaying the Tiger, A Year Inside the Ropes on the PGA Tour, made some very uncomplimentary comments about Patrick Reed when he was a college golfer at University of Georgia and at Augusta State. In the book, he stated that Reed had been dismissed from Georgia for some DUIs, and he was accused of stealing and cheating at Augusta State. Well, Reed told Golf Channel last week that he will instruct his lawyers to send letters to the book's publisher, Ballantine Books, and the author, asking for a full retraction of those claims. Reed claims he has sworn statements from University of Georgia golf coach Chris Hack and former Augusta State coach Josh Gregory saying Ryan's claims were untrue. I was shocked. That was the first time I heard it, to read something like that and see how degrading and false it is to have someone say something like that without coming to me first and asking me. It's shocking, Reed said. If the excerpt is not retracted, he said he would consider suing Ryan and the publisher. All options are open. We're not 100% sure on that yet. Ryan responded to Reed's claims on Monday via Twitter, saying, "Just want to say quickly here that I stand behind my reporting 100%, and I also stand behind the truth of what I wrote." Stephanie Wee, an independent freelance golf writer, contacted a source, and she posted a story this week that corroborates Shane Ryan's claims about Reed misconduct while at Georgia and Augusta State, and says that Coach Hack's comments are not a plus for Reed. The affidavit from Georgia men's head golf coach Chris Hack is not actually an affidavit, but a statement that Reed's lawyers used to play semantics. It also does not refute anything that Ryan wrote in his excerpt. In addition, Jason Payne, who was an assistant coach at Georgia during Reed's era, released a statement saying that Ryan's description of Reed's time at Georgia was accurate, including the suspicions. So on Wednesday, a former teammate of Reed's, agreed to speak about the series of events that led up to the suspension. This was the first time anyone from Augusta State had agreed to tell the full story. The player would not let his identity come out. He spoke on the condition of being anonymous. But according to Wee, in her Wee Under Par blog, her source, his former teammate, corroborates all of Shane Ryan's accusations in his forthcoming book. And, you know, Carlos, this whole situation is really unfortunate. He's playing so well. He's become a real star on tour. And it seems like it would just be a whole lot easier on Reed if he would just acknowledge his mistakes as a youth and just move on. You know, people would forgive him if he just come out and say, you know, okay, yeah, I did this. You know, probably I was a little misguided when I was young. Maybe did some things shouldn't have done. I moved on from that, and I think where I'm at now kind of speaks for itself. But, you know, doesn't seem to want to do that. So I guess we have the continuing story that we have as it goes.
I hope he just doesn't end like Lance Armstrong saying, no, I didn't, and now look at what happened. So, like you say, I totally agree. He just go ahead, hey, nothing better than say, I'm young, I was younger then, so I didn't know what I was doing. Just look at me now, and he's doing pretty good. But somebody that is not doing pretty good, you know, the chances of Tiger Woods competing at next month's Master dropped significantly on Friday when he revealed he would not be appearing at this week's Arnold Palmer Invitational, an event he has won a mere 8 times. He announced in early February that after missing the cut in Phoenix with a career-high 82 in the second round, and a week later withdrawing after just 11 holes at Torrey Pines with a bad complaint, that his scores were not acceptable and that he would not return until his game was up to his standards, or in his words, when he could compete at the highest level. He said he spoke to Arnie on Friday to tell him that he would not be at his tournament. The message on his website barely needed updating. If he wants to have a warm-up before Augusta, then there is only the Valero Texas Open in San Antonio and the Shell Houston Open, which indicated that he still plans to play in the season's first major, which he missed last year for the first time since 1994. However, the length of time it is taking for him to raise his game to an acceptable standard following last year's back surgery makes it almost impossible to see him contending if he does decide to give it a go. Woods' absence in Orlando means that if he is to return to action before the Masters begins on April 9, he would have to play one of those two tournaments that I said, the Valero Texas Open and the Shell Houston Open. Should he not take part in that Texas swing, would have played in just 47 holes on tour this season, going into his campaign for a fifth green jacket. He has fallen all the way down to number 79 in the world, his worst ranking since the week before he won his first PGA Tour event as a 20-year-old back in 1996. If he does not play leading up to the Masters, he will be out of the top 100 when or if he gets to Augusta. So he has not played the Texas Open since 1996 and has never played the Houston Open, and he has never played the week before the Masters. I don't know if he's going to play at all, but that decision ramps up that speculation on the state of him, his mind, and his game leading to Augusta. Since back surgery last year, he has completed only 272 hole events. He finished 69th at the British Open, 23 shots behind Rory McIlroy, and he tied for last in his own event, the 18-man field at the Hero World Challenge in Ireland, which is a course he has played more than any other. Most shocking about his debut in 2015 was his short game. Looked like mine. It was a collection of bladed shots and chunks that have led to a debate over whether he has the chips. So Fred, I don't know, but hopefully, you know, the problem that I see is that as the weeks pass by, he's becoming more and more irrelevant. And I know you're going to have something else to say about him later on the Par 5 News, but he better get his act together. Otherwise, he'll be Mr. 11 pretty soon.
Yeah, it's getting that way, isn't it? You know, I would love to see Tiger play at the Shell Houston Open. those tight fairways with all those dog legs, the way he's been driving the ball, he'd be on safari, man. He would be so far in the woods there, you'd never see him. And I will make a prediction right now. You can mark it down, Carlos.
Okay.
If he plays in the Masters, he will not make the cut. It will not happen. I really doubt that you'll see him.
That's not so difficult. That's not so
difficult. You can live with that one?
Yeah. I thought he was going to say he's going to be in the top 10 or something like that.
No. No, you can't go from where he was chipping and play the Masters. There's just no way. There is no way. Hey, Carlos, as we mentioned, the LPGA returns to the continental U.S. this week after being out of the country for the last 3 or 4 weeks. The LPGA Founders Cup is going to recognize Judy Rankin, Sandra Palmer, and Donna Capone. We're going to talk a little bit more about the LPGA Tour a little bit later in the show, but we wanted to recognize the importance of the JTBC Founders Cup that will be played. And it honors all those women who had the foresight and the will to establish the LPGA Tour back in 1950. Some of the most recognizable names from the original 13 women that paved the way for the LPGA Tour, as we now see it, Patty Berg, Marlene Hagee, Louise Suggs, and Babe Zaharias. Three pioneering women who toiled in the early days of the women's tour, Judy Rankin, Sandra Palmer, and Donna Capone, are the ones being honored this year. Judy Rankin is enshrined in both the LPGA and the World Golf Halls of Fame. She joined the LPGA Tour in 1962 at the age of 17. We talk about Lydia Ko being 17, but Judy Rankin did it even back then. She amassed 26 tour victories, earned 2 Rolex Player of the Year awards, 2 money titles, and 3 Vera trophies for the low scoring average. Rankin also captained the victorious American teams in 1996 and 1998 at the Solheim Cup. While playing on tour, Rankin served on the LPGA Board of Directors and was the association's president in 76 and 77. Rankin retired from full-time competitive golf at the age of 38 and is currently the lead analyst for LPGA Tour telecasts on Golf Channel and does a wonderful job. I love listening to Judy Rankin. She never throws anybody under the bus, but she really has great insight. She's one of the best announcers on TV. Probably should be doing more men's events. Sandra Palmer joined the LPGA Tour in 1964, captured 19 LPGA Tour titles, including 2 major championships. They came at the 1972 title holders and the 1975 U.S. Women's Open. She also topped the money list in 75 and was awarded the Rolex Player of the Year title that same year. Palmer finished within the top 10 on the money list for 10 consecutive years, from 1968 to 1977. She played her last event on tour in 1997 and is currently the director of golf at Arroyo Trabuco Golf Club in Mission Viejo, California. Donna Capone is a member of the LPGA and the World Golf Halls of Fame. She joined the tour in 1965. She won 24 tournaments, including 4 major championships. The 1969 U.S. Women's Open was her first LPGA Tour victory, and she defended her title by winning the U.S. Women's Open again in 1970. She and Mickey Wright are the only 2 women to win consecutive U.S. Women's Opens. Capone finished in the top 10 on the LPGA Tour money list 10 times, including 2 second-place rankings in 76 and 80. She retired from full-time competition in 88. She has served as assistant captain for the victorious 2005 U.S. Solheim Cup team. After retiring from full-time play, she worked as a golf analyst for both CBS and the Golf Channel. You know, Carlos, these 3 women were true pioneers of the LPGA Tour and set the stage for the young women of today that play professional golf. And also in news that Craig Kann had posted on his Facebook yesterday, the LPGA has been honored to be selected among 5 finalists for Sports League of the Year by Sports Business Journal. The NBA, MLS, NASCAR and the Big East Conference are also on the list. The winner will be announced at the Sports Business Awards coming in May in New York City. So this is really a good award. And, you know, where they have come in the last 4 years is a true tribute. And you just can't imagine that the original 13 women who founded the LPGA Tour back in 1950 and these top pioneers that we talked about who toiled for small purses and second-rate courses certainly could not envision the status the LPGA Tour has achieved, especially under the leadership of Michael Wan over the past few years. Carlos, speaking about money, you're going to talk about his heiress, who went over the $1 billion mark this year, but he's still not the king.
Oh, he's not. And you know why? Let me tell you something. Athletes typically have short windows to bank their millions, but for a select group of superstars who cultivated their brands while they were playing and after, the big paychecks have not stopped coming. The leader of the pack is a global icon who redefined the marketing of athletes in the 1980s and 90s with the help of Nike. You said it. It's his heiress, and that's Michael Jordan, who made $100 million last year, more than any other current or retired athlete on the planet. The Nike-owned Jordan brand that he continues to soar with the retail shoes rose 17% last year to just $2.6 billion. You know, Nike royalties provided the bulk of his annual earnings, but he also retains sponsorship deals with Gatorade, Hanes, Upper Deck, 2K Sports, and Five Star Fragrances. Jordan's 90% stake in the Charlotte Hornets, who is worth right now more than $500 million net of debt, made him a billionaire last year with the explosion in NBA valuations. Number two was the global soccer icon David Beckham, who ranked second with earnings of $75 million. You know, after 20 years playing, he had his biggest year ever from an income standpoint during his first full year of retirement last year. He credits that to two new partnerships with Diego and Global Brands Group, which netted him more than $20 million combined in upfront money. Those deals also have significant potential thanks to his ownership stake in the ventures, and he remains one of the top product pitchmen in sports with a dozen deals to his name, including four in China. But, you know,
he retired a long time ago.
Yeah. I don't know what he was playing.
Retirement. Retirement's been very, very good to me.
Yeah, but you know what? Also, for a foursome of golfers, you might have heard about them, and they're on the list as well. You know, Forbes said that they looked at a variety of factors, including salaries, speaking deals, endorsements, book deals, and golf course design. And who was the king among them? Hey, it's Palmer. Arnold Palmer, the king. At 85 years old, he had his biggest year ever with earnings of $42 million. Since his retirement in 2006, his popularity has exploded, particularly in Asia, where he has 500 freestanding stores and another 200 on the way. Not to mention his seriously satisfying half lemonade, half iced tea drink, which accounts for 25% of revenue for Arizona Beverage Company. So, wow, he's having a great year there. $42 million at 85. I don't know. I just wish to be the king. But anyway, 18-time major time winner, Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear. At 75, he came fourth after banking $28 million. The golf course design business has slowed globally, but the Golden Bear remains the top designer. His Nicklaus design has produced 390 courses since he founded almost 45 years ago and has over 50 in production. His closing line with Perry Ellis brings in around $250 million this year, too. And in a short while, you can even get your own very own scoop of Jack Nicklaus ice cream. Oh, my God, I want something of that.
That's got to be great. It's got to be great.
Yeah, Jack Nicklaus ice cream. You know, but what would be the big three without Gary Player? At 79, he joined the list at its six with Shaquille O'Neal after raking in $21 million. Player makes the majority of his money by designing golf courses, but he also has several endorsement deals, like the one, likes of Rolex, SAP, and Callaway. He's also written several books about golf, focusing on both instruction and business, and telling Tiger Woods that he can fix his swing with 10 minutes. But anyway, the Big Three racked up $107 million last year. And finish up the foursome with the Shark, Greg Norman, who made a cool $16 million last year. And he's tied for ninth with soccer legend Pelé. Norman dabbles in everything from course design to winemaking. He has recently was recently welcomed to Fox as its lead golf analyst. So FedEx Cup title, $10 million a year. Yeah, that's nice, but I'll take the rest of this four.
Chump change. Hey, you know, Michael has made a pretty good living out of selling tennis shoes. But you know what? The Shark, $16 million. You know, and he's a pretty sharp business guy, you know. He's made a lot of money. But you know he's sitting there thinking, that goddamn old man Arnold Palmer, 84 years old, is making almost three times as much as I'm making. Where did I go wrong? You know, can you imagine waking up January 1st and, oh, I'm going to make another $40 million this year? All right. I'd stick around too if I were Arnie.
And he's increasing with those 200 stores coming up, so he's going to continue to grow.
Oh, man. Hey, we're talking about money, so that's a good segue right in. You know, Tiger lost another major this week, Carlos. I don't know if you saw that or not, but he did. Yeah, to a 25-year-old four-time major champion, Rory McIlroy will replace Woods on the cover of EA Sports PGA Tour video game. EA Sports, you know, and that was a big money deal for Tiger too. You talk about endorsements. He took a little hit there a couple years ago. EA Sports PGA Tour video game ended its 15-year relationship with Woods a couple years ago. And this new version due out in June offers users more diverse playing options. And with Rory as its new figurehead, the popular brand hopes to re-energize a franchise that will hopefully draw a new and, wait for it, younger audience. Tiger's over the hill at 39 years old, man. He's out of it. Rory has been quoted, "When you grow up playing golf, you never really dream of being a character in a video game, let alone the guy on the box. The technology powering the game is incredible. The courses are absolutely gorgeous. And looking at screenshots from the game, you think someone just took a photo of the actual holes." As it turns out, Rory is kind of a gamer himself. He said, "My first system was the original PlayStation, which I got back when I was a kid." Like he's more than a kid now. "I'll still jump into a FIFA match with a buddy every so often. And if a bunch of us want to play, we'll start up a round of EA Sports PGA Tour. I think games are a great way to spend a couple of hours if you've got downtime and just want to relax." But you know, Carlos, for me, the bigger question here may be, will video games ever replace the real thing? You know, I don't know if your kids are into the video games, if you let them, or what, you know, what's going on there. But my kids, you know, they're older now, but and video games were kind of in their infancy back when they were kids. But it just seems like they're taking over everything. And, you know, last October, more than 40,000 people poured into Seoul, Korea's World Cup Stadium to watch teams of professionals compete in a battle arena video game called League of Legends. 40,000 people, okay, to watch these guys play a video game. Millions more turned in online through the live streaming website. You know, just amazing to me. It all marked a seminal moment in gaming, the moment it ascended from the fringe to the mainstream. South Korea was the first to fall, and soon experts predict will the United States. More than 1.2 billion people worldwide spend more than 3 billion hours a week playing video games. Colleges are establishing esports teams within their athletic departments, and last year, professional gamers competed for more than $34 million in prize money. It's a good thing that guy from North Korea, that King Jong-un, doesn't enter with his 18 straight holes and ones, he'd always win. Could it be that golf's future grassroots movement rests not on the fairway of the local municipal, but within the confines of a virtual reality? Times be a-changing, Carlos. Are you a gamer?
I was. Not anymore. I cannot even try it. No.
Hey, Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn some money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available through United Golf Network with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership to My Golf in the U.S., which offers discounted golf rounds in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows you to sell used or new equipment and earn sales credits on every sale. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
Remember, it was created by entrepreneurs to give golfers the opportunity to play golf, make money, and enjoy life. That wraps up our Par 5 news. We're going to take a very, very short break. When we come back, we're going to start with the VIG, Very Important Guest of the Week. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, our Very Important Guest of the Week. He's David Legg. He's the founder and president of One Iron Golf, Inc. He's a highly regarded professional golf club designer who was always skeptical of the need for the standard half-inch length increments between clubs within a set of conventional golf clubs. He acted on that skepticism, began an in-depth study of those dynamics of golf clubs in relation to playability, and he came up with a result on them, saying that there had to be a one-length golf club. Okay, he's now recognized as the foremost authority on single-length golf club design, and his One Iron line of golf clubs continue to be the largest-selling single-length set of clubs in the world. So, Fred, how about this interview with David Legg?
Yeah, he brings up some really good points, and I hope the listeners listen close to what he's saying, because he makes some good points. I've never played with a set of his irons. I hope that some blur down the road I get a chance to do that. I would like to play with a little bit longer wedge or 9-iron to see what the difference is at some point. But all the irons are the same length, Carlos, as you said, so that they take a measurement from your hand to the floor. They get the proper length and fit the club for you. You know, what's the favorite club in your bag? Maybe it's your 6-iron, maybe it's your 7-iron. Well, it's probably that club because it's the correct length for you. He also said in the piece that, you know, you take all this shaft flex and all these kind of things out of play because of the one length. It just doesn't matter anymore. So, really good interview, a lot of good stuff in there, and for tech geeks on their golf clubs, a lot of good information. So let's go ahead and listen to that interview, Carlos.
We want to welcome Dave Legg, who is the president of One Iron Golf, to Back and Iron Report. Dave, thanks so much for taking a few minutes and talking to us today.
Well, thank you, Fred.
Dave is the president of the company, has a little bit different idea on club length. Basically has the same length shaft in all of your irons. It does a little bit different with the fairway woods and the driver, but I'll let him explain it to you. Dave, tell us a little bit about your concept and a little bit how you came up with that idea.
Sure, Fred. Basically, what we do is nothing new. This is the way golf clubs used to be built prior to the advent of steel shafts and mass production. What we do, we take the customer's wrist-to-form measurement, we determine his proper club length, and we build his entire set, his irons, for instance, the 3-2 lob wedge, to the identical specs. These clubs are designed to fit them properly, put them in the ideal upright swing plane and swing posture for iron play. It might be noted that it's just not the same club length throughout the set, but specifications are identical in all regards. That's club head weight is the same throughout the set. Shaft flex is identical throughout the set. The amount of offset, bounce angle, so on and so forth are identical throughout the set. So for all intents and purposes, regardless which iron you pull out to hit, you're pulling out every iron in the set. They're the same. You get to the fairway woods. The fairway woods have a different design function than an iron. Whereas an iron, using an upright swing, comes down, pinches the ball against the turf, a fairway wood is designed to sweep the ball from the turf. That requires a flatter swing plane and, consequently, a longer club length for the fairway woods for that sweeping action. A driver is also designed to sweep the ball, but it's sweeping a ball that's teed up a couple inches in the air. Again, requires a flatter swing plane than the fairway woods and a longer club length. That being said, our fairway woods, 3, 5, and 7, are identical within a set. Same length, same club head weight, same flex. The driver is, like I say, longer than the fairway woods. But even so, our driver is going to be 2 to 3 inches shorter than a conventional driver on the market. Our fairway woods are going to be a couple inches shorter than conventional fairway woods on the market.
So I would notice from my set of irons that I have now, like the length of my wedge would be more like what maybe like a my 7-iron would be, and then my 5-iron or 6-iron, the length would be more maybe like what my 7-iron is, per se. You're going to even that out.
Yes, exactly. Like I say, between the 3-iron and the lob wedge, all the irons are going to be identical. For the average height golfer, for instance, that might be a 7-iron club length throughout the entire set.
Now, you were telling me that this idea is you've been doing this for 17 years, and every year it just seems to grow, and you're pretty much marketing by word of mouth and by your website, which is the number one, irongolf.com, but every year you're still growing.
Exactly. And it's just, it's one of those things that's common sense. Now, what you found in just the past number of years, when, money's been tight because of the economy and so on and so forth, the consumer is starting to ignore this advertising about, new and improved. You take the big name companies, they'll come out with a new improved set of irons, driver, fairway woods, about 2 to 3 times a year. Well, after a while, this gets old. They're not new and improved. You get these same people who will buy a set of clubs. 2 years later, they buy the new and improved. 2 years later, they buy a new and improved, and their game never changes. And the reason is because there's no such thing as new and improved. There hasn't been a technological advance in golf club design in probably 20 years. So what new and improved means is, well, they change the color, they change the styling a little bit. The performance of play hasn't gone up at all. I mean, not at all. Well, people have gotten very leery about that, and they've also become cognizant of the fact that varying length clubs, where the average golfer has to learn 12 different swings, it just doesn't work. So common sense dictates, well, Jiminy, I have this favorite club in my bag. if every one of my clubs were just like that, I'd play much better golf. And so they come to our website, they see that that's what we offer, common sense dictates, I'll give this a try. And they do, and they never go back to conventional golf clubs again.
Now, are you offering different types of shafts, different types of graphite wraps or whatever, steel, and different styles of club heads, or are these all separate also?
No. Matter of fact, we've never come out with a different club head design in all the years we've been in business. And the reason being, if there was an improvement that I could make to the club head design, believe me, I'd do it. But there has been none. When I originally designed these club heads, I designed every playability characteristic known to man into these things. And so they cannot be improved upon, and I'm certainly not going to change the color and say they're new and improved. We don't do that. As far as shafting goes, our shafts are designed specifically for our clubs. Now, it's a very expensive proposition to do that, and we're the only ones that do that. All the other companies use stock shafts from Low True Temper or some foundry over in China, and they arbitrarily stick these shafts in the club heads. Well, when you do it that way, you end up with a mismatch between club head and shaft. And when you have a mismatch like that, that's where you end up with flex ratings between shafts. If your shaft is designed specifically for your club head, you end up with a precise balance between club head and shaft. Once you have that precise balance, there's no such thing as flex ratings. The entire concept disappears. And to give you an example, we have touring pros, long drive champions playing our golf clubs. We have 80-year-old senior women golfers playing our golf clubs. Exactly the same shafting. But in either case, the shaft performs optimally for their swing speed. And it might be of interest to just interject something here. You take a set of clubs that you own right now, and you look at the shaft band. It says, oh, stiff flex, for instance. Well, I've got news. Every shaft in that set is different. If you take the 3-iron, you grab the butt end with one hand, the club head with the other, give it a bend, and then do the same thing with the pitching wedge, and you will see exactly what I mean. The pitching wedge is going to be stiff as a 2x4. The 3-iron is going to be whippy. So even within a set of conventional clubs, although the shaft band might have the same flex rating, every shaft or every club is going to have a different flex. Ours is the only set that the shaft flex is actually identical throughout the set.
I think you told me also that all your clubs are manufactured here in the U.S. Is that correct?
That's correct. They're all USA origin.
That's fantastic. You know what? We really appreciate David coming on and talking to us and giving us a little bit of insight into the One Iron Golf concept. And I urge our listeners to visit www.1irongolf.com to get more information about the One Iron Golf concept and contact David and maybe try a set of irons for yourself or a full set. So, David, anything else you'd like to touch base on before we let you go for the day?
No, I think we've covered pretty much of it, Fred. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, David, and good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
There you have it. That was Dave Lake, the founder, president and founder of One Iron Golf. And Fred, wow, he do make some interesting points there. I'm going to go after the show and test that that thing about the flex that he was saying, because it really, really makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't think that all the clubs are made the same flexibility as well.
No, I've known that for a long time, Carlos. They're in a set of clubs, there's a tremendous disparity. Unless you go right... I'm sorry. Unless you go right to one of these performance centers, like out in Carlsbad, and the shafts come off and they are 100% the same, they're going to be a lot of difference from club to club. I mean, I've noticed that over the years, you know, maybe my 7-iron and 6-iron, you know, the 6-iron won't go as far as the 7-iron will go. You know, it just doesn't have the same feel. And it's in the same set of clubs, but it just doesn't work the same. So, you know, that's been that way for years. One other point that he didn't say we were talking about was, you know, a lot of the pros have played longer wedges and 9-irons that match up more like with their 7-iron or 6-iron for years. Matter of fact, professional golf bags have a little step in the bottom of them so that it pushes up their 7, 6-iron, and 5-iron to make them look longer. But they're really, if you stood them out on the ground, they're really the same length as their wedges. And that's one of the ways they get such tremendous length, because they're playing a stronger loft, which we all know. You know, their pitching wedge is probably more like what our 8-iron really is. But they're also playing a longer club. So they're getting additional club head speed because they've got a longer club shaft coming around there. So I found that pretty interesting also. But, yeah, he was a great guy to talk to. A lot of good information there.
Hope the fans here listen and got a very good listen to this, because it was really interesting. But there you have it. It's One Iron Golf, the number one, www.1, the number one, irongolf.com. We're going to take
I got to tell you one more. Before we get away from that, Carlos, I got one more thing real quick. Because I got to rub this in. You know, this guy's from Ohio, okay? And I've had people tell me.
Let's go to the rink.
I've had people tell me for about 6-7 years that I should meet this guy and talk to him, and I never have. And so the other day I'm sitting here, and something popped up about One Iron Golf, and there was a phone number. I'm just going to call him. And so I called him up and got him on the phone, and we did the interview. But, yeah, I found it great fun talking to him.
You had to rub it in. Let's go to the
another Ohio guy, man.
Yeah, I know. The practice range is coming up. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic and take our shots at it, try to give our own opinions on it and our own take. And this week is going to be the LPGA Asian Swing Review and where it's going right now. So, you know, the LPGA season is already 5 tournaments old, and the last 3 were part of what is the early season Asian Swing on Tour, because they will return in October for a 6th tournament swing with the season and a race to the CME coming down to the wire. The first 2 tournaments were great. You know, Nai and Choi walked away with the first one, and the second one, it was 22-year-old Se-young Kim, who was the first Rolex first-time winner of the season. But the Asian Swing then began as Lydia Ko's seemingly done every moment since she entered the golfing world. She dazzled on Sunday at the ISPS Honda Australian Women's Open, sneaking away from the field on the back nine with a 2-under par 71 to finish at 9-under par. 7 times now on the LPGA Tour, a player under the age of 18 has won. Ko is responsible for 6 of those 7. 6 LPGA Tour wins, world number 1, 17 years old, amazing. In the middle part of that Asian swing, Amy Yang of South Korea won her 2nd career women's tour title at the Honda LPGA Thailand at the Siam Country Club Pattaya Old Course. Yang, who won her maiden title on home soil in Incheon in 2013, finished 2 shots ahead of overnight leader American Stacey Lewis, 2-time champion Yanni Tseng of Taiwan, and South Korean Miriam Lee. Worth mentioning there is Spaniard Beatriz Ricari, who had 11 birdies and 2 bogeys for the year's lowest round at 63, which equaled the course for a record achieved by five other players, including Stacy Lewis and Yanni in 2013. She finished joint fifth along South Korean's Se-Yeon Kim on 276. On the last leg of the LPGA Asian Swing, world number two Inbee Park defeated number one Lydia Ko and number three Stacy Lewis in the final round to win the HSBC Women's Champions after leading wire to wire and going bogey free on the tournament. You know, that Sunday featured the marquee matchup everyone wanted to see, and Inbee Park walked away on top. It was her 13th victory of her career. And this past weekend, although not an LPGA tournament, it was a ladies' European Tour tournament, So-Yeon Ryu gave everybody, including herself, a big surprise in the final round of the World Ladies' Championship. She outplayed her friend and teammate Inbee Park and won the individual stroke play component of the three-event championship at Mission Hills Haikou in Hainan, China. For the second consecutive year, Park and Ryu claimed the team victory for South Korea, finishing 15 strokes ahead of Norwegians Marion Skarpnord and Susanne Pedersen, and China's 13-year-old rising star Lei Yi finished 55th place to claim the leading amateur prize. So, Fred, the LPGA, great Asian swing, the top players, Lydia Ko, Inbee Park, Stacy Lewis, they showed up. What a great finish. Lydia Ko continues to prove why she's the number one, but Inbee not too far away. She's getting hot at the right time, so she's ready to challenge Lydia Ko. Also worth noting is Amy Yang's hot start.
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head there, Carlos. The big names have showed up again. We saw it last year with kind of a rotation of, you know, 10 or 11 top names on the LPGA Tour, pretty much on the leaderboard every week. And, you know, it's happening again with Inbee Park, Stacy Lewis right there, you know, time after time. One name you didn't mention, Suzanne, ended up third last week at the Ladies European Tour event. So she had a good week, so maybe she'll get back to her top form also. But, again, you know, we just keep talking about Lydia Ko. I mean, goodness gracious, what more can you say? You know, she is, where's my number here? She's number one in the world. She's number one in the race to the CMA Globe. She's already over $500,000 for the year. You know, and when she doesn't win, she's got a runner-up finish, four top tens in her four starts. You know, she's just amazing. And Carlos, the reason we're doing this is we're kind of building up here. You know, the women's first major is coming up in 3 weeks. They've got the Founders Cup this week. They've got the Kia Classic next week in Carlsbad, and then they go up to Palm Springs for the ANA Inspiration, which, you know, was formerly the Kraft Nabisco. But we've got all these ladies playing really good. My question to you is, though, Carlos, where is Lexi and where is Michelle Wee? Michelle Wee is clear down at 56th in the race of CMA Globe. She's number seven in the world. She just fell a spot this week. She had a T34 in Thailand, a T51 at the HSBC in China 2 weeks ago. She is not on form yet this year. Now, I know she took quite a bit of time off, like last year, and it may take her a couple weeks to kind of get back into form, but, you know, it's getting time. Lexi, a little bit more of a mystery. She's 22 on the race of CME Globe. She's young. She should be playing better. Maybe the travel, I don't know. But looking for a good thing for her because she's a defending champ at the ANA Inspiration. Someone that, you know, we watch, Aria Jutanagarn is off to a good start. You mentioned Amy Yang, You know, Minji Lee had a T7 at the Australian Women's Open. She's number 27 on the race of Semi Globe. But Jutana Garn is at number 7 on the money list with 211,000 already. So she's off to a great start. Someone that we also are watching, Charlie Hall. She's had one top 10 thus far. Charlie's going to be someone who's not a consistent player like a Stacey Lewis or a Lydia Ko. She's going to pop up for 2 or 3 weeks, be really hot, and then probably fall off a little bit because she's real aggressive at this young age. But when she gets hot, when she's on, look out. She's as good as anybody. More of a Phil Mickelson kind of thing for her. But the question is, you know, where's Michelle? Where's Lexi? Everybody else seems to be playing pretty good. Rolex rankings, you got Lydia Ko, NB Park, Stacey Lewis, Shenzhen Feng, Suzanne Pedersen, you know, 1 through 5. So-Young Ru jumped around Michelle Wee up to number 6 this week. Lexi Thompson rounds out the top 10 at number 10. You've got Race to CME Globe. You've got Lydia, Amy Yang, NB, Si-Young Kim, because she won the tournament early, Stacey, and then Na Young Choi. So, you know, a lot of good stuff on the LPGA Tour, Carlos. I can't wait for them to get back to the U.S. and maybe watch them a little bit more. When they're on in the middle of the night like that, I get up and I see the results. I just can't make myself watch the replay of it that much. But looking forward to watch them. And, you know, Mission Hills there where they play the A&A Inspiration, that's a long hitter's course. So we saw what Michelle and Lexi did there last year. So I don't know if it's going to lend itself to Lydia Ko doing well in that golf course, but Lydia Ko could pretty much play pretty good on any golf course. So Stacey Lewis is one there. I would not bet against Lydia Ko.
I wouldn't either. And she can adapt to anything, and she just continues to do. Like you say, what else can we ask for her? She's in the top 10 on all her starts this year. And I just want to add before we move on, Ariel Yutanagarn is a player that, like you mentioned, we've been following since her start a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, before the Women's U.S. Open, she got injured in her one of her shoulders and had to take a long time out. And she's just right now fulfilling again that promise. She, along with Lydia Ko 2 years ago, were those big two young promises. And she right now is living up to those expectations. About Charlie Hall, she's right now number 2 on the order of merit there in the ladies European Tour. So she's clearly a regular there, not as much here on the LPGA. So hopefully we can see more from her. But I surely want to keep my eye on Ariel Yutanagarn. She's really a great player. And with the first major of the year coming up in 3 weeks, it surely would be good to see Michelle Wee and Lexi Thompson pick up the slack that they're doing right now. Well, let's right now we have about a couple of minutes. So, Fred, take some final thoughts before we close the show.
Yeah, just a couple things here real quick, Carlos. You know, even though Rory hasn't been playing that well of late, he did get in his practice round at Augusta National with Super Bowl champ Tom Brady. So I'm sure that had to be a lot of fun. The Women's World Ranking Summit was held in China last week during the golf tournament there. That's the first time that everybody had gotten together talking about the world ranking points and how they're going to handle the Asian tour events and kind of getting themselves organized a little bit. The RNA did a report on world golf courses on their website. I would urge people that are interested to kind of get a state of the feel for world golf course situation. They can read that. Did you see the picture of that gigantic alligator walking across the green on a golf course in Florida? It was all the rage on Facebook. My question is it real or is it fake? I'm not sure if it's Photoshopped or if it's real. I people say it's real. I don't know. John Daly, your boy John Daly, took a shot at the PGA drug policy the other day. He said it's a joke. It's not random whatsoever. Steve Stricker kind of chimed in and agreed with Big John. He said he's come back from medical layoff three times, and each time he's come back from being off on a medical, they've tested him. So he said it's not too random. The new Trump course in New York City is accepting tee times if you want to go to New York and play the new course there. And the Virginia Tech women's golf coach had two holes in ones in a single round, Carlos. How many holes in ones have you had?
I've had a couple in my dreams, so definitely, I've had them just in my dreams. Before we go on, I just want to add that, Rory McIlroy will play the four-hole champions challenge at St. Andrews the day before opening round for the 2015 Open at the Home of Golf. The field at the charity event would be set to comprise former Open winners Tom Watson, John Daly, which you mentioned, and Tiger Woods will play at the Royal Court's first, second, 17th, and 18th hole. Gary Player, Nick Faldo, Phil Mickelson, Ernie Els, David Duval, and Louis U.S. Eisen has also been invited and expected to attend. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, David Lake, president and founder of One Iron Golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Altvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.